kind of funny in this work, there seems to be an inverse relationship between the difficulty of something and the amount of time it takes to explain. So today's presentation will be fairly brief. However, what we're talking about could very easily be worked on for several lifetimes. So I guess we'll call it a cosmic joke. But today, we are focusing on something that I didn't really knew existed, you know, until well into my adulthood. But that says nothing more than that I was uninformed for most of my life about what is generally referred to as the shadow side of ourselves. Carl Jung, you know, the psychologist, kind of talked a lot about this, but really this is an ancient idea that existed, you know, for many, many years before anyone in contemporary times kind of started looking at it closely and kind of codifying it and stuff like that. The individual that I worked with over the years was, she referred to herself as a Celtic shaman, right? So shamans are very ancient workers who operate in a lot of modalities for a lot of reasons. But if I had to sum up kind of what their ability is, in one sentence, it's kind of to be a bridge, for those that need one, between the world of the seen and the world of the unseen, right? And whether that's outside of us, if there is such a thing, or between the unseen and the seen within us, that's kind of their realm. And so this woman that I worked with called herself a Celtic shaman. So she simply used those skills, and she did it within the context of the Celtic pantheon, right? So, but at the core, she was shamanic. That's how she approached stuff. And so I learned a lot about that. And we did a lot of what was called shadow work, is how she would refer to it. And this was 10, 8, 9 years ago when we began. So when I say the word shadow, what I mean is that kind of hidden part of all of us. So we talked last time about one of the building blocks of reclaiming your power is to fully accept responsibility for everything in your life. I often explain it as the radical acceptance of what is. Like, if we could all do that, this world would be a very different place. If we could do that fully, each of us, our lives would be very different than they are currently. That is kind of the journey that we're on. One of the most difficult parts of this acceptance thing, because it includes everything, it includes you, right? So accepting you is its own challenge, accepting yourself and what that means at every level. But there's an even bigger challenge, because one of the most difficult parts of you to accept is this part of you that we refer to as the shadow, okay? So you can think of the shadow as the unconscious, the subconscious, right? The not seen part of you. But it even goes beyond that. It generally refers to all the parts of you that voice in your head, the ego that you have, criticizes, judges, thinks shouldn't be there, makes you feel guilty about, compares you with others about. So if you think of everything in our existence as kind of one living, breathing entity, right? And we're living amongst all these separations of that. So each individual, we have kind of a separate self, or one that we perceive that way. This path to power is really a path towards remembering the wholeness that we have, right? Seeing through all these illusions that are brought right in front of our eyes in very practical ways, like when people aren't happy with us, or when we let them down, or when they don't understand us, or they think we're weird. Like, those are the practical level symptoms of this separation, of what is ultimately a separation of part of us. It's kind of fragmented into pieces, right? And so right now, the reality for most of us is that we have this voice in our head that is constant. That is the ego. It's very domineering, but very insecure. It is very frenetic, so it's energetic, but not in a good way, like nervous. It is anxious. It is scared for its survival. And it will do just about anything it can to feel okay, right? So that kind of summarizes the force that controlled my life for decades. The ego also has a lot to say about this shadow part of yourself. Frankly, number one, the shadow part of yourself, all these things that we'll dig into, there's an enormous amount of power there of yours that you're keeping there, because you believe that there's a reason that you should be keeping it there. So the shadow isn't good or bad. It's this separate part of you, right? But according to the story that your ego has about all of this, that story is very different. It is very bad. It is hidden with things that no one should find out. It is full of things that you cannot be proud of ever, like the fact that you will explode at your children eventually, or the fact that you will not call X, Y, or Z friend or family member back because you're angry about something they did 10 years ago. All these parts of us that if we had to put them in the newspaper, we wouldn't be so proud of. Your ego loves to point out how terrible all of this is. And the issue with this is that if we are on a journey towards reclaiming our power, it is very difficult to fully do that without addressing this separation of us, this enormously powerful, kind of dark, meaning unseen, not bad, part of who we are. And most people do not address this. And so what ends up happening is that we all together create a world that mirrors this perfectly. If you want to know the current reality of your inner state, just take a look at your life, because it will be a very good reflection of that current reality. Again, you may say, well, what I see is bad, or it's good, or it's somewhere in between. All of that is kind of your story, right? And that's okay. We all have one. But the important thing to remember is our outer reality is really just our reflection, right? So that it's not a problem. It's a tool. So when we're talking about the shadow, which is kind of a nebulous topic, even though we're going to get kind of very specific here in just a minute, think about the things that when you're talking with someone or working with someone that you just can't stand. Pet peeves are things that kind of drive you up a wall. Those are little clues about what is in this shadow part of yourself, because generally, like I said, with this whole reflection thing, what you can't stand about other people are the very same things that you can't stand about yourself, right? And if you begin to look at things from that frame, everything in your reality takes on a very different meaning. So this shadow part for most people is the place they never really want to go. It's the stuff they don't want to talk about. It might be full of fear. It might be full of anger. It might be full of everything that you're ashamed of about yourself. It might be full of all the things that cause you guilt. It may even be full of all the things that are completely running your life, but from a place you can't see. So when you read books about mindset and stuff, oftentimes they'll talk about the subconscious, right? I'm kind of using subconscious and unconscious as the same, at least, universe. What generally happens is the things that you can't see, let's take in the form of an energetic pattern or some sort of thing that keeps happening over and over again in your life. When you can't see it, number one, it doesn't mean it's not there, right? And number two, it means that that thing is doing its thing underneath the surface where you can be aware of it, look at it, and maybe change it or do something with it, right? It is completely automatic. So I think I recommended a book by Bruce Lipton in the last session. It's called Biology of Belief, and it's based on work he did, over his lifetime, trying to connect this mindset, positive thinking, self-image, stuff that is on one end of a spectrum with actual science. And he wanted to make the connection between, or to explain, that what is in this subconscious, what is running unconsciously in you, and in terms of what we're talking about today, all of what might be part of your current shadow side of yourself, all of this is actually affecting your biology in ways that we can look at. The book is fascinating because it really brings these two worlds together that up till now haven't had a lot of respect for each other. Like, the science people need to have things in a certain way, and the mindset think your way to success people don't do it in their way, and vice versa. And he is really the bridge that shows you, oh my goodness, like, all of this is no longer, all of this type of work that we're doing isn't relegated to this, like, woo-woo end of the world. Like, all of this is actually part of one whole body of knowledge because it's all about human beings. So it's a fascinating book. Anyway, back to this shadow. All of these things that we have taken parts of ourselves and put into this side of us that we would rather not exist. Michael Brown, in his book The Presence Process, another book that I recommend in conjunction with this work, talks about at some point in the book how his ideas about how someone's definition of love is created, right? Our minds can agree pretty well on what love means, right? But he took things deeper, particularly with the whole idea of where our brainwave states are up until the age of seven. Like, we're very open, like we discussed last time. And his idea that I probably will never forget the day I read that, for the rest of my life, was he came to the conclusion that your definition of love is not the one that your mind says it is. In fact, your definition of love is whatever you received when you reached out for love as you were a young child, right? Some of us got hugs, some of us got slaps, some of us got yelled at. And through his work and the bringing together of many traditions, just one of which is this whole shamanic path of things, he began to see, oh my goodness, if I guess at first he went within himself. He was trying to, cure himself of a physical disease, and that's what started him on all of this work. He was like, if he, went back and tried to figure out what his definition of love was. The reason that he wanted to do this was, once he found that out, he was like, whatever that definition is, no matter what it is, you will do whatever you can in your power to recreate that emotional charge for the rest of your life, unless you deal with it. And so, for a lot of people who wonder, man, why does this keep happening or that keep happening? His contention is, well, it's because you actually are creating that, right? And when you think about this topic in relation to this shadow self, this part of us that we would like to ignore, but is part of us and wreaks a lot of havoc if it isn't dealt with properly, you can see how all of these things are beginning to connect. in that book, The Presence Process, he also talks about something, and I don't believe this is his idea, this is a generally known idea, something called the 7-year cycle. How in people's lives, these energetic, emotional kind of patterns seem to show up. He went back in his life and started, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, started trying to go through the major events of his life and see where the patterns were. And he started seeing this 7-year cycle. Things would kind of repeat. Not that the same stuff would happen, but he would end up feeling the same way over and over and over again. And he was kind of caught in this loop. And the reason that it's a 7-year cycle ties into what we talked about last time, where up until about the age of 7, our brainwave state is such that we are basically being programmed. We are very open to accepting any stimulus from the outside. We accept it in without question. And so it becomes our programming, and we repeat that unless we deal with it. So the problem with avoiding this whole shadow side of yourself, especially if you're really looking or willing to do the work to reclaim your power, the problem with not looking this square in the face is that these unwelcome parts of you will run automatically like programs forever. They will show up in your client work. They will show up in your family life. They will show up even in the chatter in your mind. So, and this is where I was for years. I didn't even know it existed, let alone how to deal with it. But because I didn't, it literally owned me because there was no way for me to get out. Okay? If you, I think it's Seth Godin, he wrote a post a while ago, but I think he talks about it fairly often, about this whole imposter system. We're all afraid of being found out, right? That's your shadow right there. That is the fear that's within that. And that is the type of stuff, that fear in particular. Think about the way, if you deal with it, then you know, if not, just imagine. Think about how that controls people's actions. It keeps them from shining their light as brightly as they would, because what if? It keeps them from saying certain things, because what if? Right? And that's just a tiny little part of it. And we all have different combinations of gunk that is all in there. The thing is, there's really only one way that I found that's effective to deal with it. And I was taught this, and I'm going to pass it on to you. You don't resist it. You don't fight it. You're not going to like overcome it. Why? Well, maybe you will, but the whole premise of that is wrong. If you start from the foundation that all of this is actually part of you, right? So to be at war within yourself, or even a liken it to that type of imagery is not really in anybody's best interest, right? So this is not the part of you that has to be suppressed or controlled, or fixed or improved or all those terrible things that imply that what is right now and the way it is not good enough, right? We talked last time how that is a dead end, and that core kernel of mistruth, I guess you would say, is basically responsible for ruining experiences of life, like all over the place. And it starts with something that simple. So if you don't resist the shadow, if you don't fix it, if you're not trying to push it away, pretty much the only thing that's left is to integrate it. Right? Because unless that's done, unless this separation between you two, you parts of you, unless it's lessened and you do work to start bringing that together, you basically exist, as a broken individual. Not that you have to be fixed again, it's that you have to be, remember that you can come together. The way you integrate things like this certainly isn't to think your way through. The mind is not so helpful. In fact, in regards to this work, it's what got us into this mess in the first place, because it created this artificial part of ourselves and put a fence around it and protects that with its life. So, as I said last time, a quote from Michael Brown, it's not about feeling better, it's about getting better at feeling. Why? Because when you are able to stare this kind of garbage in the face and actually like sit there and feel it, that is the process of integration. That charge that holds something separate from you begins to get neutralized, right? And over time, when you do this enough, that separation begins to disappear. When I started this shadow work, right, the woman I worked with, we did a lot of different things. And my primary issue always has been is fear, right, in its many forms, fear of the unknown, fear of what if he doesn't deliver, what if their expectations are too high, what if they don't like all of that, right? But it was the flavor of fear. And I would say that during the course of our work, it's not that I overcame anything. It's that I realized that half of myself was over there and I could go reconnect with that. And in getting in that habit, and we'll talk through a couple exercises for you to do this with, it slowly became less of an issue. There wasn't a bright light and my life was fixed. It was gradual and it was over time. And even now, I still do the work. I'm just at a very different part than I was 10 years ago. So I just want to give you a couple of ideas for what to do, what to start doing, to try. See what resonates with you, to begin staring this side of you, you know, in the face, and dealing with it once and for all, slowly, whatever speed you want, so that it no longer controls you from kind of this invisible puppeteer, you know, station. So one of the things that my teacher had me do, and it's funny enough, it is actually in the presence process as well, I believe, is to, you know, do a grounding and centering meditation like we talked about last week. If you haven't heard the recording, go back and listen. Just a simple exercise to reconnect with your breath, to kind of bring your energy into a more centered space, and kind of step one for all of this work that we're going to do. So you start with that. From that point, the next thing is to imagine you today, you know, and we're projecting these pictures into our imagination, right? And I'll explain more about that when I get to method three here. But for now, just know that we're kind of projecting all of what I'm saying into the movie screen in our minds. So there you are on the left side of your movie screen as you are today. And on the right side of that movie screen is, well, maybe the 7-year-old you or the 4-year-old, right? Just think of a memory that comes back to you from your childhood and pick that age, as young as you can kind of get to. And imagine that that individual is extremely scared, doesn't have anybody around him or her that they know. So very anxious, scared, not sure what's going to happen. And then you imagine walking over to that individual as your adult self and putting your arms around that individual and bringing that being into you. Now, when I did that the first time, the feeling that I had in my gut, which I was used to this big knot of energy swirling around, it was almost like I was starving to death, but I wasn't hungry. It was that gnawing feeling. Like, that's what I lived with almost all the time. I felt for the first time in a long time that begin to loosen. And the woman that I was working with, you know, she was just filling in the picture for me that I was projecting on my movie screen, you know, that I could look at that child and say, like, it is okay that you are how you are. You are safe now. And just talk to it like you would to a complete stranger that was that age. You would be extremely kind. And as it turns out, when you are able to do that to yourself, for some people, they might not resonate for this method. With other people, you may start to bawl. You know, for other people, Like me, I just felt like, oh my goodness, for a second there, I felt okay. Now that might seem like a bunch of make-believe, maybe, to your, if you have kind of a skeptical ego, and that's okay. I'll explain in the next couple methods why this is so effective and how maybe to alter it to something that does resonate with you. But try that and see what happens for you. We'll call that method one. Method number two, we are going to focus on what Michael Brown calls the messengers. So I mentioned that often in relation to the shadow work, we can begin to figure out kind of what's in there for us by looking at all the things that really annoy us. And looking at all the people out there that really just rub us the wrong way. And earlier I said, if we can do this, our whole perspective on reality shifts. Why? Well, what we do to others in terms of judging, reacting, that kind of mean commentary we have sometimes about other people, we're usually doing to ourselves, right? Or like I said before, it's something that you don't like about yourself and you're seeing it reflected to you and it creates this charge. Most people meet that charge with resistance. They don't even know what's actually happening. They're like, why is this person so darn annoying? Can't I catch a break? This method focuses on completely switching that upside down and beginning to view these people not as adversaries, but as messengers, right? They are bringing you exactly what you need to be focusing on. And most people are getting hundreds, if not more, messages like this every day, right? Especially with the people that are closest to you. We phrase it as, wow, they really know how to push my buttons. Well, that's one way to talk about it, not a very empowering way. And it's a way that further strengthens your prison instead of opens the door. We're talking about looking at that and saying, okay, first of all, I'm not going to knock the messenger down. I'm actually going to be grateful for this individual showing up with this thing for me to look at right now. Next, I'm going to ask myself, what is the lesson for me in this? And if you can get in the habit of that as your go-to move without having to think about it, and I'll be the first to admit it takes some work depending on where you're starting, the craziest thing will happen. Number one, you will find yourself in a state of gratitude for most of your day. Amazing things happen when this is true, right? Because the whole energetic pattern that you're emitting shifts. Very hard to be grateful and angry at the same time. Very hard to be grateful and fearful at the same time. Very hard to be anything not helpful when you are in a state of gratitude. And this allows you to, in a very empowered way, take what everybody else might call life's daily challenges and turn them into ways for you to actually get better. Okay, so the messengers aren't coming to fight you. They're bringing you your next lesson. And those lessons are often what will help you integrate this charge on the shadow side of yourself. Those are two quick ones. Method number three is something that's called shamanic journeying. Very ancient. A very ancient practice that I'm recommending you experiment with and see how it does or does not fit. Some people, when they close their eyes, have little to no problem getting that movie screen in their minds going. Some people just aren't wired to do that very easily. So at least try this once to figure out which you are at this moment. This is certainly a learned skill. So if you want to do it, you're going to do it regardless of how easy it may be here at the beginning. So we talked a little bit ago about this movie screen in your mind. And in the last session, I mentioned Psycho-Cybernetics, which was a book written by Maxwell Maltz. Again, in the early, mid-1900s, maybe, I mean, a while ago, plastic surgeon wanted to figure out why people who he made look beautiful on the outside still didn't think they were beautiful. Got him into focusing on self-image, the whole subconscious, unconscious side of ourselves, all these programs that run. And his recommendation, and I talk about it often in the client letter, is for 21 days, make a new movie in your mind about you, the way you want to be, in all its detail with smells and sights and sounds, right? You were projecting your movie on the movie screen of your imagination. Why would anyone do that? Aren't we told to, you know, kids play make-believe, but adults don't? Well, the reason they tell you that is because that's where all your power is. Because the unconscious side of you doesn't take direction from your ego. The unconscious side of you takes direction from you and from external sources in the form of symbol and image and feeling, right? So if you're going to begin to unlock the keys for figuring out how this side of you works, that's the language you have to speak. Symbols, imagery. And so that leads us into this movie screen in our heads. So it is make-believe. And it's effective because that's how we access these deeper levels of our consciousness. So it is not childish. Kids are the ones that have it right. It's just that people are way easier to control when they cut this part of themselves out. Way easier to control. They can be scared to death. They can be slaves forever, and no one will even notice because this has been removed from them. But it's still there, and you can reclaim it, and that's what we're doing. So shamanic journeying is really a way to a process where you get this movie going in your mind, and you do it in order to get access to information and parts of yourself that aren't so readily available while you're in your normal state of thinking. Okay? So when I learned this, I learned it in relation to the world tree, which if you're not familiar with that, you know, feel free to Google it or whatever, but in its simplest form, it's an image that's been around for all of recorded history, really, right? And it is a tree as a representation of kind of all of reality and existence. So you have the roots, which represent kind of the underworld or the unseen, that which we cannot see inside of us, inside of these, you know, areas that we have covered in darkness at the moment. Then you have kind of the trunk area. That's the normal world, the normal reality, what is right in front of us, what we can perceive with our five senses. Then you have kind of, you know, like the limbs and the leaves. That's kind of the upper world, the world of the divine, right? And so this general archetype exists in many, many different cultures, cookie cutter, Norse, Celtic, all over the place. And in terms of shamanic work, this tree, again, is used as an image and symbol in the mind to help focus what's going on. So, the first time that the teacher that I worked with had me do this, we started with the grounding and centering meditation, right? My mind was going 4 million miles a minute, which is not helpful. So, that is why that meditation that we covered last time can be so valuable, even if you do nothing else. Your ability to recenter yourself kind of on a moment's notice will pay off for a long time. Because what you won't notice is that each time you do that, if you do it often, you're actually having to pull yourself back less and less. You're staying closer to that center more and more, right? And that's the long-term growth that can happen with something as simple as that. So we started with that. You know, I was in a comfortable position, either sitting down. Many people lay on their back, whatever's comfortable. And you close your eyes. And all while you're doing this, you're maintaining, you know, the awareness on your breath. Like you're staying here. You're staying in this moment. And if thoughts are whizzing by, you know, you just notice them. You don't go into them. You just notice them go by, and then you come back to what you're doing. And come back to the moment that you're in. And from that point on, you can do this a number of ways, but we can just imagine that movie screen in your mind. You know how before movies start, they have a countdown or something? Well, just watch that countdown go from 30 to zero and just count it back in your mind as you see that image go from 30 to 29 to 28, right? And all we're doing again is we're slowing the brain down. We're moving ourselves on purpose into that alpha state so that we can work with our mind in a different way. So you get to zero. On the screen then is shown this image of the world tree, right? You have the roots under the ground, but you can see them. You have the trunk, you have the upper limbs and leaves. From that point, you look at the bottom of the tree. We're doing shadow work, right? We're actually going into darkness, and we're just going to see what's there for us. We're ultimately going in ourselves, right? We're not looking for someone to save us. We're not looking for, here's what you should do now. We're just going to start walking, right? And so on in that movie in your mind, maybe you notice a separation in the root, and you just go right into it. And your imagination takes you right through it. And what do you see? Well, that's a good question. That's where this is called journeying. You are going on a journey. Journey, right? And you take that journey wherever it goes. And oftentimes, before you begin, you could focus yourself with a simple question if there's something you'd like to know. One great question is, what is the highest use of this time for me now to learn? You know, what am I here to learn at this moment? And you just are asking this question of out loud, right? And the reason you're doing this is because the part of you that we've cut off, not the ego mind, but all the rest of you, where all of your power is, like there is a lot of truth that is accessible to that part of you that currently we don't take in our daily journey. And we're trying to bring that back into us. And so when you do this journeying, it is with the intention that you can access that information, that you can find answers, that you can be led to ask more and better of the right questions, right? And so this is a tool that you can use in a lot of different ways. But with shadow work, it's kind of a way to communicate with your subconscious mind about what you're trying to do here, right? And again, this is something that you can just take this kernel and totally make it your own, because ultimately that's what matters. There isn't a right way and wrong way to do this. There is simply the best way for you to reconnect with this side of yourself that the world has said you shouldn't be connected with. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't be that way. You shouldn't have those fears. That's really, you know, really rude, or that's extremely self-centered. Like all of those things that we have been told that are not right about us, we packed in there, and this shamanic journeying is a way to go and begin to get symbolic answers. Again, you're communicating in symbols, so oftentimes you might be given symbols, whether, like I remember when I actually signed up for a session with a shaman here in town years ago who did this for me when, you know, I didn't really know much about it at the time. And he was one of those people where the brainwave state he was able to get himself into was so deep. I really didn't know if he was okay. He was like laying there so still for a while. And then when he came back into his like conscious mind, he gasped so loudly as though he hadn't been breathing. It really freaked me out. But that's what he was doing. He was going into this part of himself, an area that he was very well versed in, how to traverse it, how to notice what symbols communicated what things to him. I mean, it was like learning a new language, or he had learned a new language. But it allows you to go into places you can't otherwise go. And they're ultimately other parts of you, right? So those are three kind of from very simple, surfacey just sit down and try this methods to now this last one, which really can provide a lifetime of serendipitous information, I guess would be a good way to describe it. This really helps us connect our kind of small selves, our daily selves, with our bigger self, in a way that nothing else I've experienced has. So, give these a try. See if any of them resonate. If you do have an experience and you want to share it with me, feel free. Hey, I did this. Here's what happened. That would be great. The only reason I'm curious is just because I want to know what your experiences are. So you can share what you feel comfortable sharing, leave out what you don't. That's fine. The point here is to understand that until we first make a conscious commitment that we are just going to do this, we are going to look into all of this gunk, and we're not going to run, and we're not going to hide, and we're no longer going to think that we're screwed up. We're simply going to look it right in the face, begin to be okay with it, and then slowly work to integrate all that back into us. This whole thing is in the context of us talking about business and work, right? And when you bring all this work back out into the mundane world, what you end up with is an individual who is whole. Again, why do we want that? Well, number one, there's no better way to go through life than this direction. Number two, most people are not this way. So when they encounter the presence, even if it's separated by thousands of miles over the internet, of someone who is this way, it is extremely attractive. So we've just spent the last, 40 minutes talking about things that may, depending on your experience, may make you wonder, like, what the heck am I supposed to do with this? How is this practical? Well, that's the reason. Because when you come back, you are a different person. You are more you than you've ever been. And that's really the goal, because that will ripple through and provide benefit not only to you, but to everyone else you touch, because you will demonstrate that there is something more available to them than that they might not know about. And that will bring them towards you. And it doesn't matter if you're a massage therapist or you are painting pictures for people, that's the bond that gets created. And that's kind of the attraction from a deeper level. If you think you're broken, you tend to be attracted to people who aren't. And no one's broken, but until they realize that, this brings people closer to you so that you can serve them. All right. So that was kind of a big topic to cover in 40 minutes, but so be it. Any questions? So please, yeah, Bashal, let me unmute you one second. There you go. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you?
Yep, loud and clear. What's your question?
Awesome. Jason, thank you for the amazing presentation. I couldn't join from the beginning, so I listened to the recording. I have a specific question about this mindset and shadow. Many times what happens is, excuse me, I'm doing everything well, but imagine that I depend on somebody, whether it's somebody in my family, somebody in the business. So let's take a business example. Out of my few team members, very few team members that I have, imagine there is one person that I know that person is going to do well. I know that person will make the calls and update the spreadsheet. And I depend so much that sometimes I'm not going to do the inspection every single day. And imagine 7 days go by and I then find out they did not do the work for the last 7 days. I freak out completely. And at that time, I lose control. Not only that, I feel my breaths become very fast, because I watch my breaths. That's how I do my meditation. But in that moment, I know that if I just silence myself and if I just let about half an hour go, everything is going to be perfect. But in that moment, I called them. I was like, I became very, very verbally, very sound. And it's not a good feeling, because after about 15 minutes, then I realized, oh my God, I could have made a better choice with my words. I could have made better choices with my emotions, and I'm losing every single time, and I'm losing respect for myself. If you are in my place, how would you handle that situation?
All right. This ties into another thing in the presence process book, another point of clarification or differentiation. What you're basically describing is that you react versus you respond, right?
Right.
And when we react, I think I talked about this last time a little bit, if memory serves me correctly. The reaction is you running an automatic program, right? That's what reaction
right.
means. Responding is the opposite of that. So in that moment, I think the first thing that would be helpful to me, and I've dealt with that, right? Not in team member, but that, like, just for a second, your entire universe goes to pieces. And you feel flush and you get hot and, like, right? That's you losing it. So first of all, I think is rather than viewing that as a problem, it is now every time that happens, you have in that split second an opportunity to either get the lesson or not. Right? And what is the lesson? I think one possible lesson might be that in that split second, you get the opportunity to totally own what is going on or to not. And I know that ultimately, because of the person you are, you'll own it, right? But that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about that moment where the train comes off the rails and what to do then. And that, I think, is probably an enormous opportunity. So what happens the next time that happens? Well, in that instant, your mind is going to go for, I mean, you're the verbal stuff, the how you react, that's your mind, right? And so in that moment, if I was dealing with that situation, the first thing that I would do is get out of my mind. And do that, like I told you, that grounding and centering meditation that we do, eventually you'll get to where you can get in that state in like a second or two. And that's what I would do. Like even now, I'm envisioning me feeling all that. And the first thing I do is take that breath up and down. And I'm trying to feel that kind of reconnection with my point in space and time right now, my grounded space, where I'm at, and to get back there before anything else happens. And maybe you'll totally forget to do this the first time. Maybe you'll remember that it was a possibility the second time. But to me, I think no matter what emotional situation we're in, that go-to move is the immediate regrounding and centering. Because until you're back in you, in like the real you, anything you do there is probably just a subconscious program that's going to not help anybody, right?
So to clarify, you're saying that grounding exercise that you taught us, I think the first time I heard from you was in the Big Self Blueprint audio program that I went to about a few months ago. So next time it happens, you know, practicality. So you are telling me if I just remind myself to do it, if I don't do it, that's okay too. But if I remind myself a few times to do it over and over again, that becomes my next second nature in a moment of disturbance.
Well, the connection that I'm trying to make in your being is the second you have a situation that triggers you like that, your automatic response is that recentering.
Okay.
And I don't know of a magic way to get there except to slowly move yourself in that direction until that is your subconscious reaction.
Got it. So it's happening automatically instead of me thinking about doing it every single time.
That's right.
And the way I get there is to actually do it consciously a few times until it becomes automatic, like you're saying.
It is a practice. I mean, it is a choice you make every time. So, yeah, I mean, if I just off the top of my head, that's what I'd recommend.
Awesome. I'll do that, and I'll update you and everybody on the call the next week when we are here. So thank you so much for answering. And Jason, on behalf of all of us who are on the call and who are listening to the recording, thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right. Very good. Any other questions? Comments? I was having a hard time with the grounding exercise when I imagined the energy is going through me. I felt like I was going back into my mind, not feeling my body. Is this common? Should I keep trying? I'm not very good at the mental picture stuff. I think what you've described is actually 99% common. And that's just a clue kind of how much out of practice we are with actually being in ourselves. So, you know, what was happening there was your mind was simply doing what it does, which is distracting the real you. And because you made a choice to do something different, doesn't mean your mind is going to comply. You know, so I would just persevere and keep trying. Don't get frustrated. Just keep doing it. And when you notice you're losing, you're going back into some sort of mental chatter, bring your mind back and back. And you might do it one time every 10 seconds. You might do it 10 times every 1 second. Doesn't really matter. But like I said, it is a practice. You must, that's really all this is. It is a decision whether or not to practice it. All right, other questions? Yeah, David Hawkins, letting go the pathway of surrender seems similar to Michael Brown's presence process. That's right. See, I think more and more in this day and age, all of these people that are out there talking, trying to help people, are getting closer and closer to, like, the truth. And really, I'm talking about the truth in terms of, okay, we're kind of spiritual beings. We're here on a physical level. So we're kind of a spiritual being in a physical body with no instruction manual. What is the smartest way through here? And over the eons, that's what people are figuring out. And so I call it the radical acceptance of what is. David Hawkins calls it the pathway of surrender. It is total. That's the empowered version of what surrender means. The willful acceptance of what is. Isn't it funny that surrender has a bad connotation in the mind of in the world of mind? You gave up. You let him down. You didn't do as well as you should. When really it is the secret. And it is the only way to fully carry your power in every moment of your life. There is no other way except through surrender. Religious masters have spoken about it. Spiritual masters have spoken about it. They don't teach it in school for obvious reasons. But yes, I think everybody's kind of slowly converging on the few elements of truth that are common to us all. All right, thank you for that question. How much do you think practice of personalized affirmations help you stay grounded? Does that go opposite to acceptance of what is because I'm affirming what I want instead of what is? We'll talk a little bit about this in the future. I think for now, the important thing at this stage of the work is how deeply we are able to feel what is ever going on inside of us, right? So do I think affirmations are valuable? Yes and no. I don't think affirmations powered by mental chatter, I think that's leaving a lot of potential on the table. I think affirmations that possibly generate an emotional state that then can be focused or worked with are far more powerful. And I struggled for a long time as I was doing this, like, accept what is. Like, then you're like, well, what am I supposed to want then? How does that work? Like, are we not supposed to set goals? So I just wake up, do I have nothing that I want to achieve? And I struggled with that for a long time, trying to get that clear in my being, like, what is the right way through here for me? And there is a very different feeling between wanting something or needing something, needing being, you know, the strongest and least powerful version of want, right? There's a difference between that whole spectrum of things and a spectrum that comes from setting an intention for something. And we can talk about this in the future. That, to me, has been most effective. Because if I am fully going to be here now, fully okay with what is, that does not mean that I have no plans. What that does mean is that I have severed my emotional attachment to them on a daily basis, except when I'm actually accessing those deeper parts of me that I know somehow control reality. That's when I bring that emotion of what I want and it being done and how I will feel then and attach it to the picture. That's a specific practice, right? Some religions call this prayer. Heal him, please. Some traditions call this magic. Energetically, very similar until you get the story involved. And it goes back to session one. The mind focuses, the emotion or feeling provides the power. And when you put those two things together, that is, in large part, at least how it seems, how our reality is created. Okay? All right. Anything else? Value of daily journal with images and desires. Certainly. I think the more time you can spend in this state where you're able to access your subconscious and affect things on this level, I mean, it's like learning to draw with a pencil. The more you practice it, the better you get, the more effective it gets. All right, any other questions here before we wrap up? I will get this recording up. Again, feel free to share whatever experiences you care to with me via email, support@incomparableexpert.com. Of course, they will just be from my eyes. It appears to me that you are presenting our general current state of disconnectedness as being somewhat conspiratorial. Why is that? Why would it be beneficial for us to live remotely from our truth? I don't believe it's beneficial for us. I believe it's beneficial for individuals who would like to control other individuals. So I wouldn't even call it a conspiracy. I would call it that some people figured out how to control other people quicker and better than each of us figured out how to control ourselves. So I don't believe there's any benefit to any level of humanity that comes from you living remotely from your truth. I believe there is a ton of benefit for certain other entities in this world for you to do that. Because when you are living remotely from your truth, number one, you don't know what that truth is. Number one, you are confused. Number one, you tend to be scared. Right? And all those qualities are required to be controlled, to be kind of shepherded this way and that way, to do the bidding of others ultimately. And so that's why I keep alluding to that. That's why when you go to school, we're taught certain things that take our power, that willingly separate us from our, or cause us to willingly separate us from our power, right? And I think that if that wasn't the case, talking about this kind of stuff would be of no interest to anyone because we'd all know it. But there's a reason that this is kind of a universal issue. So hopefully I answered your question there. All right. Anything else? All right. Well, thank you very much. We will meet back here again next week. Please check the event page because each week has a different access code. So just check that a minute or two before you log on. But I'll also send another reminder. So thank you all, and I will see you next time.